Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today we have Ruth Soderlund on the show. Ruth is a Fresno artist passionate about building connection within the art community. Her new endeavor, the Artist Mentorship Project, kicks off this month, April 2025. The project aims to link artists of varied skill and professional experience to provide young and emerging artists with support as they pursue their individual career goals. Ruth hopes that this will be a catalyst to bring some big ideas to life, drawing attention and economic growth to the art made here in Fresno. This was a wonderful conversation. Ruth and I are aligned on so many of our goals for Fresno, and I know you'll love her. Let's go meet Ruth, and Baker will take us there.
Blessed to infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best.
Ruth, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Oh, I love this question, and I have been thinking about it. I think that I am a taco girly, and I can eat at El Premio Mayor every day if my budget allowed. I have a long history of loving taco shops. I grew up in Modesto, and my dad's in ag, and so the taqueria feels really comfortable to me. So that's my favorite.
What's your order?
And then I saw that. What was that?
What's your order?
Oh, I just like carne asada tacos. I'm a little boring. I grew up on them, and the taqueria that my dad took me to in Modesto didn't give you the option of whether or not you wanted the salsa. So they were always blazing hot, and that's just how it comes.
So you've acclimated to that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Okay. I love that they let us put it on ourselves, but it's how it should be. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of art topics that we're going to go through. We're going to start by talking about journey and childhood, because I always to start there. But let's just define terms. How loosely should we define the term artist? So some comparable thing would be, there's this kind of world right now of people that are fitness obsessed, and everyone's an athlete, quote unquote. And then once everyone becomes X, then X becomes nothing. For you, like, how loosely or strictly should we use the term artist?
I started college as an art major and ended up dropping out when I was 21 because I understood that you can be an artist without education, but I didn't really feel comfortable calling myself an artist because I didn't know what I was doing. And to me, it felt that to be an artist was to be very intentional. And I know that not everyone holds that same philosophy, but for me, I wasn't prepared to be a fine artist until I figured out what I really wanted my art to say. And so in that time, I had 17 years before I went back to school, and I was ready to go, and I knew what I was going to say. And in that time, I became a knitter to the master degree and a professional seamstress and continued to create all the time. So I was an incredibly creative person, but I always struggled with calling myself an artist. I would not restrict anybody from calling themselves an artist if that's how they want to identify. And I think there's all different kinds of artists, and we shouldn't exclude anybody.
Gotcha. Can we teach kids too much technique, do you think?
Oh my gosh. I, as a kid, found the technique to be incredibly fascinating. I had an art teacher named Tina, and that's all I remember about her in elementary school. I remember in first grade, the day that she taught us how to draw a cube, and my mind was blown, and all I wanted was more of that. I have regrets that I didn't get to follow that as closely as I wanted to, but it's great how my life has come back around, and you grow up and you get in touch with that inner child again and then figure out what you're supposed to be doing. And that was my journey.
If you could pull one lever to improve art education in K-12, and that lever could be just give art teachers crazy budgets, hire more art teachers, have smaller classes that are more seminar style with art. If you could pull just one imaginary giant lever to improve art education, what would you pull?
I think paying our teachers, it's got to be multifaceted, because I think it would be a big, taking care of teachers is the most important thing. And part of that is paying them well, but the other part is continued education. So I know so many art teachers, and I think that they can go down this tunnel vision of teaching. Let's say you're teaching high school and it's the same lesson year after year, and you do get to see a variety of students and all these ideas, and it changes with the generations. And in that way, it's great. But if we can really infuse the teachers with all the contemporary news and techniques and things like that, it would just make a more vibrant learning experience. And one of the examples is that currently it's become more trendy to use a CMYK palette for painting. And that's what I use. I use a magenta, yellow, and cyan blue. So it's not your basic primaries. And that is a newer color theory. And talking to other teachers that have been in it for a long time, they might not even be aware that's happening. And so it's for me to be able to share that information is fascinating. I love it. And I think just to pursue growth and education at whatever your job is, but especially for artists, because if we're able to teach the students like the latest ideas and the latest concepts, then they'll be better prepared to just jump in once they graduate. And that's for all levels, like for the kids, the high schoolers, Fresno State. I would love to see the artist students who are super serious about being artists, like just be ready to launch as soon as they graduate.
Should we formalize the process of teaching doodling? Marginalia is always available to children throughout the day while they're taking notes or whatever they're doing. Should we not only encourage it, but teach it? Or do you think that's something that's just it's just like an inborn thing that kids do if they feel drawn to it?
I think that making teachers aware of the benefit of doodling is maybe that would be the most effective thing. My oldest son is 12 and he just started homeschooling last week, which I forgot meant that I also am now a teacher to a 12-year-old. And what I'm finding is that every single time we sit down together, especially during math, he has to doodle. Like he's going to get his work done, but he's also going to draw a lot. And if we are policing that and saying, focus back, we're doing this, what are the variables? What is the sum? And not allowing for that room to wiggle, whether it's physically or in your brain, like which doodling I think is allowing some of that thought energy out. It's really cool to witness that in my own kid. And yeah, so I'm grateful that we're homeschooling, but it is a new adventure and it's given me a new perspective already. Because I do think that controlling a classroom full of 12-year-olds is such a gigantic task. And I think that things like doodling could be a tool that could allow kids to channel energy. Yeah, I don't know if we need to, I don't know, I haven't thought about building it into the curriculum, but I bet there's scientific studies that talk about the benefits, and I know that there are professionals in art education that have their PhDs that are probably studying this too.
Should we be concerned if children's first experience of making art is digital? Is there something like sacrosanct with like more tactile forms of art? I'm thinking as kids start to, in the classrooms I've been in recently, everyone's on a Chromebook or some kind of laptop. And so there's not a lot of, and that's not true for art classrooms I've been in. I imagine a world where schools are looking at their budgets and saying, there's software that we can just give kids and they can make art on their Chromebooks. Is there a downside to that, do you see? Or is that some kind of like artistic conservatism that's just like the old ways are better, quote unquote?
I think that is such a great question and definitely makes my brain split into a thousand different pieces because there's so many aspects to that. And I would say kids, you can't keep kids from making tactile art. That's an innate part of being a young human. I think that is so attractive. And you're never gonna find a kid that's, oh, I'm not an artist. Like up until a certain point. Every kid is gonna, it's art time, they're gonna be right there. They're gonna have attention ready, permission to make a mess. It's incredible. It's the most freeing and it's really good for us. I think that I'm such a tactile, like analog artist that I don't warm to technology super well. I am early 40s, so I've of that generation, the like Oregon Trail kids that we didn't really have a lot of computer education until like junior high, and then to see people really lean in and take off with digital art is amazing. It's not really for me, but I, being an older student, going back to Fresno State, I had computer art my last semester there. And to see what some of these younger students were making blew my mind because I didn't even know where to start. Like when it's physical, I know how to layer colors or to do the sketch first. But when it's digital, I like it was a whole new language. So it's a completely different layer of the art brain, I think. And it's not going anywhere. And I would also like to say a really cool example of adopting digital art technology would be the artist David Hockney. He has been one of the most successful two-dimensional artists in the world since I think the 60s or 70s. He's famous for his pool paintings. And if you saw them, you would recognize, oh yeah, I've seen that before. He's so cool. And now he's, I think, in his 80s or 90s. He's recently, in the past like 10 or 15 years, I think, picked up the iPad. And the first time I saw his digital work, it was so childlike. And for me, I have really, I'm a critical, like art critic. And I just thought, oh, that's like, that's so vulnerable of him to pick up a new medium, put work into the world to sell these digital prints that are like maybe not technically that good. And then to watch him continue bravely to develop those skills and continue to put work out. Now you look at what he's doing and it's great. And for me, that was an example that I held closely while I was in computer art and was so frustrated. Like, if David Hockney can do this and get really good at it, I can do this too. And I think having an open mind about all those ne new technologies is really important.
Yeah, and also depends on what your telos or your goal is, right? Goal
Absolutely.
is, if your goal is self-development or exploring parts of yourself through your art, I think starting from wherever you start is great. If your goal is just to sell commodities, then it can then that raises the question. But that's a whole different. Let's talk about mentoring. That's a kind of a right turn there. I want to dig into it because I we're going to talk about your mentoring program here in a bit, but I want to dig into kind of the theoretical of what a mentor is,
Cool.
because it's a fluid concept. How would you define it? What is a mentor?
I think a mentor is someone who has professional experience, who has a point of view that maybe a newbie is not going to have, and who would benefit the newbie by pointing out pitfalls, helping them to bypass certain obstacles.
Can a mentor be unhelpful, or is that does that kind of void their identity as a mentor? Let's say you have a mentee and you're like, they shouldn't be an artist, and you almost lead them away from it in some way. Is that being a mentor? Is that something else? Like,
You're touching on all of my anxiety about this project. This mentorship project does not have, at this time, limitations on who can participate. And I anticipate that those things might come up. And so that's where I'm like hoping to use my intuition to match people well. We are having training so that there will be really specific expectations for these relationships. I think that it's really valuable to give honest feedback, but the first and foremost thing should be understanding the goals of the artist. And so in our community, there are artists doing incredible things with all sorts of different goals. So for me, I want to be in museums. I feel sometimes I feel silly saying it, but I'm obsessed with the Venice Biennale and I would like to have work there. That's one of my stretch goals. Other artists are so passionate about art hop and selling on the street, and that's what they love, and they get so much out of that. For me, that would just make me crazy. I can't.
Let me ask you this because you brought up goals. So I had a academic mentor. My background was history, and he was a very strong-willed, opinionated, had a kind of myopic view of what was important and what wasn't. And I spent a lot of time with him, both in seminars, and then I also worked for him. I worked for the Fulbright Commission and worked with him pretty closely on some projects. And towards the end of my time with him, I couldn't really distinguish what my goals were and what his were. They just became so enmeshed that I really couldn't, I lost a sense of myself in my relationship with him. How do you distinguish between your goals and your mentor's goals? How do you keep, and should you keep those separate or they just blend? Like, how do you see that?
Yeah, I can totally relate. There are times where you share an idea with someone and they love the idea, but then they springboard into five other different things, or they already have a 3-year plan for you. And for me, that's been really overwhelming, and I have to pull back and be really conscious of, okay, actually, my goal for this is just this first step. And it's cool to know what can happen. I feel like growing up, I always benefited when I had someone that could cast a vision. And part of the reason I'm doing this is so that people like 19-year-old Ruth could have someone that could help cast the vision. And I think it comes back to it's the mentor's responsibility as like a healthy mentor to really understand what the mentee is wanting out of that relationship. And so that's definitely going to be an important part of this project for sure. And also, I would say building into this project short-term relationships, every mentorship partnership is going to be assumed to change every 6 months for this project. There will be probably partnerships that will want to go much longer than that, just because they turn out to be really beneficial. And that's to totally going to be fine too. But I think getting the most out of someone in the short term might be the healthiest way to address that. And then if you're like, yeah, no, not quite the best fit, or that was irritating, or it required so much from me, sometimes that's the way relationships are, that you have to be open-minded, and that takes a lot of energy until you find that partnership that feels comfortable. And yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Okay. Can you, if you're a mentee and you don't have goals, is it helpful to have a mentor? Show it, because I encounter this with students sometimes where they'll show up wanting some direction, but they don't really give me much to work with. And it's almost like they don't have a sense of their own purpose or direction, and they show up not wanting to be guided, but given. And so that, how do you think about that? Should people show up with goals in order to have a mentor?
I think that it's not required. I think that for me, like I look back at my life, like this whole thing is because I wish that I had certain things in college the first go around. And I had these, I think we all have a certain idea. We're in art because of some reason. And it's not just because there were no other options. We're there because we're drawn to something. If we have a mentor who helps draw that out of us, who can lead us in conversation to new ideas, you're going to find something that sparks passion. And for me, like my journey was really interesting. I became a mom, and we've been foster parents. We have a daughter with Down syndrome. There's all these aspects of me. And then coming to art because I felt compelled to paint, I'm like, will my art be about those things? And at first, I really didn't want it to be. I wanted this to be a whole new thing that was separate from my mom life because I had a lot of things that I needed to deal with to accept that part of me. And so I really leaned into some other ideas, researching feminism and what I might say about that and how I pursued certain things in my life because I didn't understand like the power that I had, or I didn't have help to figure out or give voice to my goals. And that kind of, I followed that path for a little while, and then it led into a sense of healing and being able to merge all the parts of me. And so now the work that I make is really truly representative of who I am and all the aspects of me. And so that's my big wish for anyone coming out of school, especially if you want to make art, you're very serious, but you need to have someone figure out what your goals are, just what subject to focus on for a little bit. Yeah, I think a short-term mentorship would definitely fill that need.
Okay. Let's imagine that the Fresno State Art Department sees your mentor program and they're like, oh, we want to formalize this as part of Fresno State's program. You become the czar of art mentorship at Fresno State. What would you do to help art departments mentor people better?
Oh, amazing. Okay, so first of all, I have considered, like any art professors, anyone that does that as a job, they are off the hook for this project because I think that they do so much to care for and shepherd the students. And so I would ask for them to refer their students who are clearly ready to launch and for them to funnel these students who are really focused and hardworking into this
So you
project.
imagine there being a floor that you need to reach in order to be ready to be mentored?
Yeah, I do. I think that you could be mentored as a student still, but I think you need to get through that process. Being a student consumes so much of your time and mental energy.
How do you know that you're ready?
Ooh, I felt it. Like I was, so when I remember when I dropped out because I was like clueless. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's a waste to go to school. That's very obvious. If I had like maybe met with a counselor, that they probably could have gotten me back on track, but I was ready to give up and I did. When I came back, I took one class and it was during the pandemic, fall of 2020. It was painting. It was the first college level painting class I'd ever taken and it blew my mind, changed me forever. And it was very clear that this is the path I'm on. And immediately I knew that if I'm serious about this, I need to know what I'm saying with this work. And I do really see that in a lot of other students. The students who are really serious, they know what they want to do. They are already like chomping at the bit at your last two semesters. I did take two semesters of advanced painting at Fresno State before I graduated, and all of us were just ready to go. And there are some, I think, that we're still searching. You can see that. There are people who get through and maybe haven't found that passionate thing yet. But those of us who are ready knew we were ready and we're going for it. And I think it might have had something to do with me being like 40-ish, that there's a certain sense of I can't waste any more time. So let's get this thing going. And yeah, and it's been incredible to bring people together and to share ideas. Once you know that you have a whole team of people that want the same thing as you and you're not going to compete, you're going to cheer each other on. Which sometimes can be hard. You have to practice that. But that's really working. And I think that a lot of Fresno has the same mentality. Like, we all want Fresno to be like a beacon for Central Valley arts. We all want us to be a place where people are drawn to. And so there are some strategies, there's a 5-year plan. Like, we're going to build some really great things.
Now let's talk about some of the different models of mentorship, which I think would be helpful just to talk about their strengths and limitations, because there are models out there and they have been used to mentor people. And I want to get your kind of perspective on them. Obviously, the first one, and this is probably the oldest in the world of art, is the apprenticeship model,
Yeah.
which I know some people still think about. Some people go to study with a specific person to carry on a tradition. Do you think that what are the strengths and limitations of that particular model, the apprenticeship model?
That's so cool. I think it's amazing, but what with that is that artists don't always find their own voice or their own style. They are going to make art in the style of the person that they apprenticed for. And so if you're going to apprentice, the teacher really needs to be in tune with what their trainee is, I don't know, wanting to do. And so that can not, yeah,
Can
it
be
perpetuates a certain style.
claustrophobic, almost stifling
Yeah.
for your personality. If there's one artist in the world you could do an apprenticeship with, who would it be?
Oh, probably Jenny Saville, honestly. She does these huge, really large figurative paintings that are really loose. And it's so funny because it's not how I paint at all. But I think it just looks so fun and expressive. But at the same time, it might be my ADHD brain, but I'm always going to be working in different ways, like loose and expressive and portraiture and things like that, but then also have really tight, clean, focused still lives. So there's a lot of different things. There's a lot of
Yeah.
artists that I really respect and would love to learn from, for sure.
Let's jump to the next model, which is there's a few different ways to frame this model. One way is I'm going to frame it as the progressive education model. And this is really common in schools right now. The idea is pretty simple. Everyone has that core creative, unique thing inside of them, and the purpose of a teacher, a mentor, whoever, is just to, like a Michelangelo with a block of marble, like to find that thing that's hidden underneath. What are the strengths and limitations of that model, assuming that everyone already has the answers, the mentor's job is just to help them find them?
Okay, so this makes me think of there's an artist, Gustave Courbet, who I can't remember the name of the painting, but he did, I think it's like, no, I can't remember it. He was a painter, late 1800s. I read a letter that he wrote when he was asked to be a teacher in France for a new studio that some academics were establishing. And he wrote that he could never be a teacher. Because there shouldn't be painting teachers, because we're all learning together. And if they wanted to establish a studio and he would come and paint and they would all learn from each other, that's cool. But he would never, ever teach. And so that kind of is the same, it's a similar idea that when we come together, we all learn from each other. But then there's also like around mid-century, the 50s, when abstract expressionism was really big, the modernist style of teaching was really hands-off, really just feel it, do whatever. And so let the canvas speak to you and whatever. I think that if you don't have an understanding of the art history and the foundations of painting and what's come before, like, how are you really going to be able to achieve your dreams? So I think there has to be a focus on skill, and
Yeah,
those
I'll give you
skills
an
are tools.
example of that I experienced. I was at a book event and I met a person that had written a science fiction novel, and we were talking about his novel, the plot and different things. And I asked him if what kind of science fiction influenced him, and then I started listing science fiction writers that I had enjoyed. And he didn't recognize any of the names, which it's not a big deal. People have different tastes and preferences in the world of science fiction. But then he had told me vulnerably at a certain point that he hadn't really read all that much science fiction, which I think you can do something, you can write something, but I do see writing, art, just all the creative disciplines as a giant conversation over time, and that people are just talking to each other through their work. You know, poets are talking to each other, novelists are talking to each other, visual artists are. And so it's hard for me to, I don't want to say take seriously, but yeah, it's hard for me to take seriously someone that isn't aware of the conversation going on, if that makes sense. And
Absolutely. Absolutely.
so.
And that's definitely something I'm passionate about too. And I totally nerd out over art history to see the parallels and the way that certain ideas resurface in the cyclical manner to see the pendulum swing. It's so cool because then you're having this conversation with these people that feel like soulmates a little bit and they've been dead for 100 years. I feel like I have such a connection to people like Georgia O'Keeffe and Alice Neal and just all these women that have gone before and done incredible things.
Yeah.
And it sometimes disappoints me when I'll get into a conversation with someone and bring something up and realize that, where that limitation is, and that maybe there are certain things that haven't been, gosh, sometimes we don't know what we're doing and we enter into the conversation we don't even know. And then you talk to another artist and they're like, oh my gosh, this reminds me of, and then you are able to make the connection. Sometimes it's subconscious.
Two more models of mentorship. This one is the idea of, it's termed experimental or kind of constructivist. It's the idea that the goal is just make a bunch of stuff without any sense of direction, and then the mentor comes after the fact and just helps you sift through what you, which you could call this project-based learning in education. There's a lot of different ways to frame it, but essentially the idea is the direction comes after the creation, if that makes sense. So how do you view that in the mentorship world?
That would drive me crazy because as a mom who has like all sorts of things going on, the biggest struggle I have is making art just for art's sake. And if If that's, I know, but I think it's so great. If you are someone who is compelled to make art and you make a ton of art and you're just going all the time, to have someone come in and be like, this is your strength, this is your strongest thing. I think that teachers do that a lot currently in contemporary education, especially in my art classes, to be able to say, this didn't work, but this did, or this little part is amazing. What did you learn from that right there? And if you can identify those particular strengths and then repeat it, I know that we were doing that all the time in critiques. We're like, this particular thing is genius. Keep going. Which, oh my gosh, we're not supposed to say genius, but sometimes it just hits.
Yeah. What about the next one we might call the institutional model? So the purpose of mentorship is really just to help people build a career, make money, get in the right networking circles, like let people create their art, but what they need help most with is just marketing their art and finding buyers. How do you think about that vis-a-vis kind of like creative mentoring?
There's a ton of that on social media and people who are monetizing that. I think that can get really overwhelming for those of us that, like, we know that selling and supporting ourselves is the end goal, always. Like, people who's, I guess there are people who don't do that, but
Independently
we,
wealthy people.
yeah, I don't know. That's not so much the case usually. And so I think that understanding the economics is very important, and understanding the art market and everything. But it can be so frustrating too, because there's a lot about the art market that feels really corrupt. It feels really unfair. It feels just a lot of money laundering a lot of times, and you can't really know what is legitimate. And that you've got all these artists who are pouring their heart and soul into all their work, and then if they don't have gallery representation that gets them to Art Basel or Frieze LA or these big markets, then the people with money aren't ever going to see their work. And so, as artists, you've walked that line. It's, do I want to pursue that? Is that part of my goal? I think for us in Fresno, it's like we're never really going to be able to play that game, probably,
Probably
but.
saving your soul too.
Exactly. Like, I think we're
So
making
thank
something
God in
so
some ways.
pure. Yeah.
All right, last model of mentorship. This is often termed the psychoanalytic model, which is like mentorship is really helping people work through their quote unquote shit so they can
Yeah.
make artists make art in the purest way possible, uninhibited. I will say I don't know if my creative activities would be as good without my trauma. I'm not sure. And so it's, I don't know. How do you view a mentor getting involved with someone's like mental life as a support in a mentor
It's
capacity?
so dangerous because artists are really emotional creatures, and we already are analyzing so much all the time. And we also tend to be very comfortable sharing our true selves. And so those kinds of connections are easy. It's easy. And I've created a code of conduct for this artist mentorship project. And not saying that personal conversation isn't allowed, but to be aware that the focus should always be on what the emerging artist's goals are. And if figuring out how to put their own personal experiences into the work is a major part of it, then that has to be part of the conversation. But all at the same time, this is not therapy. It's not substitute for therapy. And I think that whole healthy individuals are fully capable of making great work, and we don't have to be tortured artists. We don't have to be traumatized. We can definitely use our trauma. There's an incredible artists who are funneling their life's experiences into work that is so profound and resonates so well. But it can make things really complicated.
Yeah, and get messy fast for sure. All right, we're going to come up for air and go to my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to
Okay.
throw a bunch of things at you. You tell me whether you think
Great.
they're over or underrated. Why? I'll give you a few either ors too.
Okay.
We'll start with an either or. Oil, paper, or canvas?
I love oil paper so much.
Okay, sell it. Why not canvas?
I work primarily on canvas because
Okay.
it's like standard, but oil paper is awesome because you can
How do you get it not to bleed? What's the kind of, what's the process?
So I use Arches oil paper. It is treated so that it doesn't absorb the oil, but it does, it sits on top like canvas. It's incredible. You can, there's other brands that I've tried that are not as good, so I would stick to Arches. It's expensive, but for me it's worth it. And I've done a whole portrait series on paper, and I love it, and it's easy to frame. And if you want to work on paper in oils, you can also gesso good multimedia paper and then work on that. So there's lots of options if you don't want to work on canvas. I find myself working on canvas though, just I think because it's traditional.
Yeah. Next one, Mean Ed's Pizza.
Oh, okay. So I grew up in Modesto. There is a Mean and Ed's on Coffee Road that it was one of my like comfort foods. I would go in and I get a personal size combo and it was mind-blowingly good every time. Every
Okay.
time. Okay, but that is the end of my Mia Ned's experience.
Okay,
I
fair enough. So maybe it's slightly overrated for you.
Yeah.
All right, next one. This is an art form that I'm obsessed with right now, fiber arts.
Oh, you have come to the right person.
Yeah, so tell me, overrated or underrated?
Underrated. Art, fiber arts is having a moment right now. It's
Okay.
very
Can you
popular.
explain it for people what it is exactly?
Absolutely. So being like a semi-professional knitter. I also, as I pursued painting, did not want to use those skills at all. I wanted to go full painting, and everyone is encouraging me to consider how I might use those skills. So, fiber art is where people are incorporating yarn and fiber of all kinds, really, and making they can be two-dimensional or three-dimensional. There was a show at Scarab in February or March, March. And no, yeah, March. I was one of the jurors for that show. And there was an artist there who I don't know their name because we juried it blind. And they did some knit fingers, like really long knit tubes, and then had it all knotted together with little ends sticking out that had red fingernails, but it was all knit. And it was incredible that piece got third place. And I think it was titled something like Crossing My Fingers or something like that. Really cool. For me, I've done a couple of pieces right now at Arts Visalia. There's two of my pieces hanging for the month of April. And one is giant water drops that I knit that originally installed were like 20 feet high. And each water drop is about like between 24 and 36 inches in diameter. And then I also did a topographical map of California that is covered in finger crocheted fabric, which also is considered fiber art. And so, yeah, stuff like that. It's really fun. There's so many great artists doing that. And also using machine knitting. I know Kamala Harris's stepdaughter is all about like machine knitting, and she does some really incredible things too. So.
Yeah, I'd encourage people just to Google fiber art because I think you just need to get a picture. All right, next one. This is another either or, Florence or Venice?
Oh my gosh. Have you
Or I
done
should
either?
say Fiorenza if I want to use the Italian name. Yeah,
Yeah.
Florence or Venice?
Okay. It's really hard. If this is okay. The Venice Biennale is a life-changing experience. However, Venice is overrun with tourists, and it doesn't matter if you go during like the American season or the European season, which I was there this last August, and it was all European tourists, and it was crazy. But the Biennale is so valuable. It's the original biannual art festival. The entire world is represented there, and it's incredibly beautiful. If you like art, that's the place to be. Florence, though, I went on a study abroad in 2022 and spent 3 weeks there. And I was not that interested in going to Italy at all. Paris was my place. I didn't care about Italy. When I showed up to Florence, I had done no research at all. I knew no Italian words. I didn't even care where we ate dinner. And I totally fell in love with that place. And to go back to it last August was really special. It's beautiful. There's so much history. And for me, it was one of those things that I had to do. I will always endeavor to go back to Venice every other year if I can scrounge the money together because it's really great. And Florence is the sister. I love them both.
Next one, plant-based oils.
Oh, for Art making or eating?
Yes, for art making. Yes.
Okay. I think they're all plant-based, maybe.
I know they're trying to move away from chemical
Yeah.
additives and things, make
Yeah.
things,
No,
quote, more organic.
definitely. All of it.
But
All of it.
just like a lot of things in life, when you
Yeah.
try to substitute something for political, environmental reasons, sometimes the actual technical use of the product can be inferior. Sometimes I'll try and make a healthier version of a meal, and then it just is not great. And I should have just done the original thing versus doing the
Yeah.
kind of slightly better ethical version of the thing.
The oil paint and oil medium are based with flaxseed oil or linseed. It's the same thing. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the way that is sourced at all. It's yeah, flax, which is commonly grown even in the United States. And yeah, it's used in so many ways. It's a good drying oil. There are some oils that don't dry out, like canola oil. You can use it to clean your brushes, but you cannot use it as a painting medium because it will take years and years to dry. Yeah.
Next one, quilts as art.
Okay. I think that it is underrated, and I am saying that because I tried quilting when we first moved back to the valley and it was too hot to knit. I was like, I'll try and make some quilts. It is so hard. The skill it takes is incredible. And so for the quilters out there, like, so much respect. Sorry.
No,
I'm
it's more
talking.
fun that way. Yeah. Yeah, that's
Um,
great.
there's the Modern Quilt Guild is doing mind-blowing things with fabric. And a couple years ago, the winner of their annual conference did this like faceted diamond quilt, like incredible. So yeah, underrated.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you been to the quilt auction at Fresno Pacific that happens
I
in the.
haven't.
Okay,
No.
I'll have to send you a message next time.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Okay, two more art auctions.
It's problematic, honestly. So overrated. It's
Okay.
did you know
Does
that
it actually, do you feel like it actually provides a sense of value in any way? Do art auctions actually give value to art, you think, or is it just
Yeah.
commodification?
So unfortunately, I think the trend is that if a painting is so sold at auction, so you've got a collector has bought a painting from an artist, and then for a certain amount of money. If they went through a gallery, the gallery took probably half of that. And so there's a $10,000 painting, which for most of us would agree that's a huge amount of money. And then that artist is only getting $5,000, which comparatively not a huge amount of money. That collector might hold that painting for a couple of years, maybe 5 years, then decide they don't have room, they don't want to store it, they send it to auction, or they sell it to a friend or whatever. That next step up, generally, there's going to be an appreciation, especially if that artist has kept working and grown in popularity. So that collector is going to be able to sell it for more, and then they're making the money. By the third sale, it's like astronomical, and all of that money is going to the person that had it last, not the artist. It doesn't trickle down. So most artists like hate art auctions, but they are a part of the market. I don't know. There are just a lot of different things in the beast of the art market that aren't always beneficial to the artists. But
Okay.
yeah, so overrated.
Great. Last one, and this one had its moment. It still exists in some capacity. NFTs.
Ooh, first of all, I don't understand them at all. So way overrated. Let's just scratch it from the record. No, thank you.
Okay. Great. That's a good full stop there. Okay, let's do some general questions before we close up. And these are just some general art questions I had for you,
Nice.
random somewhat. Do you think artists on average are more introverted or extroverted?
I think that we definitely have introverted artists, but most of the artists I know are a weird combination of both. We require alone time, and so you have to be okay being alone in order to make art. It's like you get your brain into this weird focus. Sometimes like a hyper focus where you lose track of time. You could stay up till 2 in the morning, it's no big deal. Like you're getting the job done and it feels so good. And then you go 3 days without talking to anybody and you realize you're gonna go absolutely insane if you don't get out and socialize. So it's important to have that balance. A lot of us tend towards anxiety or depression too. And so being able to find that balance between solitude and socializing is really important. I will also say that I have witnessed the importance of community ever since getting back from that trip to Italy in 2022. A group of artists and I meet at Gazebo Gardens every Friday, and to have that commitment to meet has been really important because it's built these relationships and it's intergenerational. So we have people from their 20s up to people in their 70s. And that's been like the impetus for the mentorship project because I've seen the benefit of that intergenerational connection. And a lot of times, young people are not going to be interested in approaching older artists, or you feel like they're deified in a way. And so, if we can take that stigma away and just connect people, that's what I'm all about. And also, another friend of mine, another artist, she and I decided to get some women together, women artists. And I just wanted to get people together to discuss this one article that I found really compelling. And it was just supposed to be a one-time thing. But it ended up that we wanted to keep meeting, and we've met every month for the last year. And it's like a lot of people might think, oh, some like woman's club or whatever. We don't want that. That sounds silly. Because we do a little artistic project every month too. And it feels very, I don't know, craft circle. But it's so beneficial to get together with other like-minded people and connect and know that you have that coming up. And even if you are depressed and you do not want to go, like we've always found that showing up is the right thing to do. And it's the way that we can be our best selves and keep going and encourage each other. So,
I want you to pull out your crystal ball for a second. Let's imagine just in the future, and I'm starting to see this trend where we have this bifurcation between, on the one side, handmade individual pieces of art becoming something that's of the realm of the wealthy. And then on the other side, we have computer-generated art, AI-created art for the masses. Do you see this kind of like bifurcation in the future where the handmade is going to be something that the wealthy exclusively own, and then the mass produced, the AI generated, is going to be for the rest of us, quote unquote?
In this current environment, I hope that we have a little bit of a restructuring. I would really love to see the majority of people paid well enough so that they can afford those things that make life more beautiful. Oh, it makes me emotional. We moved to Tower in last October, and looking around our neighborhood, that I believe it's like about 50% of our neighbors live below the poverty line. And to understand what that means, like my husband is a teacher at Reedley College, and we can afford to maintain our home as necessary. But those people that can't, that are living at that level, like the things go into disrepair and you live with less or you let things go. And then I think about it's helped me to understand gentrification in a new way. If you spend decades not being able to maintain your home, then what happens? Like a lot of times people lose them or end up not being able to afford to live in this neighborhood because of gentrification. And so that's helped me to have a new perspective on the economics of things. I would love to, I think art is very important, and having art that you love, I think it's becoming really rare for people to experience that. People are able to go and spend $16.99 on a painting at HomeGoods, and they can love that. That's fantastic. My mom one time FaceTimed me from, I think, TJ Maxx, and she's, Ruth, okay, I just needed to let you know I found this painting and I love it so much. It's exactly perfect. The colors are right. It's framed and everything. It's on clearance for $16.99, but I feel bad buying it because you could paint this for me. And I'm like, Mom, I can't paint that for you for $16.99. The cool thing is that company, TJ Maxx, HomeGoods, they do pay their licensed artists pretty well. So you can buy that art and feel okay if you fall in love with something there, that's fine. But yeah, I would love to get to a place where our middle class is paid well enough that they can afford handmade art. And that's what I'm holding on to.
Do you think artists would be better off if they deleted all their social media?
Oh my gosh. I want to every single day. Yeah, it's terrible for the brain and what I've because, oh, you see what everyone's doing. Gosh, it goes both ways because you get inspired by social media, but then you get really intimidated and scared too because you're things that, oh my gosh, I could never do that. And so I think the answer for me personally is limiting it. Just you can check in every day, but don't let yourself get in the doom scroll and understand why you're doing it and better self-care ways to care for yourself. And just we're in a time right now where I think we're all feeling desperate or losing hope in a lot of ways. And so we're looking to fill that. We're looking to build up the hope or find connections. And we do that socially. I would also like to say that to combat my doom scrolling, because I would get paralyzed there and then end up not doing anything on my to-do list that day, I've endeavored to be up and dressed and ready for the day by the time I take my kids to school. I drop them off. When I started this, they were at three different school sites here in Fresno. And after they're all dropped off, I go to a local coffee shop and shout out to Alchemist and Component, my top two, love them. And then I have a connection with a human being, just ordering in person and then sitting down. I give myself an hour to read, I don't have to do any work. And that changed everything for me. So it made me less reliant on social media because I've had a real life connection with a person. I've given myself time to center, to invest in my own self and my own mind. And then from there, I'm like ready to go. I'm ready to head home and get to work. I think finding ways that you can, we cannot separate ourselves from social media as artists. It's like the way that we connect. This artist mentorship project is almost entirely on Instagram, and we have a website, but the word is getting out through Instagram. And so we're not going to give it up anytime soon, but we do need to look out for our own health.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of Fresno questions before we wrap here. Let's talk about the Fresno art scene. How would you describe it to outsiders?
We have the most diverse and supportive art scene, I think, that I've ever been a part of. I think that there's artists doing all different kinds of things, influenced by all different kinds of things, with all different kinds of goals. There's groups, like culturally, there's different groups. So, whatever you're looking for, there's a place that kind of fits your identity. Part of my mentorship project is to want to bridge those individual groups so that we can learn from each other and share resources. Art Hop for me is primarily artists supporting artists. So I get out there every first Thursday, and it's just all of my art friends, and everyone I talk to is an artist. None of us have any money to buy each other's art, but it's a really beautiful community. And I do think that we're doing a really good job of cheering each other on and wanting success for all of us. I think that there's a lot of us who have raised the banner of one person's success is success for all of us, and we all want to move forward. Yeah, we do really want to sell our work. So there's a barrier there. Like we need to figure out how to be lucrative, but that's something that maybe the mentorship project can take on as well.
Let's talk about the mentorship project from a perspective of what you want people to get out of it. And I want three different groups here: mentors, mentees, and then you. What do you hope, just personally, you get out of doing? Because you're making something, right? You're building something. And I don't believe that you can be a good architect if you don't also have some kind of personal goal in that. I don't know if you watched that movie, The Brutalist, that came out. It's like an art house film that came out at the end of last year, and it
Oh,
follows an architect that comes from Eastern
was it
Europe.
Adrian Brody? Yeah, I
And
read.
so everyone in there had their own motives for this architecture project he was designing. And so could you go through those three groups?
Yeah, absolutely. For the mentors, I think that it's so important for people to stay connected. And I think through my conversations with some older artists, hearing them say that they don't think that the young generation is interested in galleries, they don't think that they want to be connected in any way. I was like, oh, no, actually, they just don't know how to approach you. They don't know how to get involved. And I also want the mentors to understand that their life experience is so valuable. Even I've heard a lot of older artists tell me, like, oh, I don't think I have anything to give to this. You probably wouldn't want me as a mentor. I'm like, do you have gallery representation? Yes. Okay. Then absolutely you should be a part of this. Retired, but in your 70s and selling work all the time. Absolutely you should be a part of this. You have something to give. Even if you are making art regularly and not selling it, you're just doing it for fun. You still have so much life experience to share. And even with your regrets, like you can help shape someone else's life. That's amazing. And also, as we build these relationships, my hopes would be that the emerging artists would be an asset to the older experienced artists. Maybe they would want to come on as studio assistants and work in that way, getting towards the apprentice idea. That would be a benefit as well. And then also, as the mentors, they might even pick up new skills or try new things because of the exposure. So there's that for the emerging artists. I just keep going back to that 21-year-old Ruth, like what she would need to succeed. And just to have someone with experience listen and say, oh, okay, so here's what you need to do first. That's incredible. If we can have one conversation like that, amazing. In like my second semester of painting, I did a Zoom with my teacher and he said, oh, look up this artist real quick. She's doing work that kind of reminds me of what you're doing. I like started crying because her work was so beautiful and I could see the similarities. And to look at that, it felt like it gave me permission to try new things and to push further. And so, in that way, I think that's how the mentees will be benefited.
And then
And
you.
then for me, it's so funny because I'm like, am I going to pick a mentor for myself? Like, I have a lot of relationships that I
Well,
feel
you as the
built
architect of
up.
the program, what are
Yes,
you getting
yes.
out of it?
So my bigger goals, I already shared, like I really want to get into bigger galleries outside of Fresno, and I would like to have museum shows. And so for me, building this up gives me confidence to connect with more people. And definitely one of the things I've learned is that artists are just people. So if you like an artist and their work, like just message them on Instagram. Like a lot of times they will talk to you.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool. So for me, it's all about, gosh, I remember sharing this idea with friends and saying, this is something I believe in so strongly that I would do this for free for the rest of my life. And it's because I really do want to see Fresno's art scene grow to a place that's financially beneficial for all the artists, and that there's a really clear path for how to get there. And yeah, we have
How
some.
will Fresno change if your program is successful? Not for the artists, have some financial stability, but the rest of the non-art city, how will that change if your program is successful?
I think it would be so cool when we look at, like, in California, the two big art metropolises are San Francisco and LA. There's so much interesting things to do. I would love Fresno to understand that they can come to these events, the art hops, the gallery receptions, and to have it be just to be more social and not just for artists. Long-term plan, which almost every single person that I've pitched this idea to comes up with this idea on their own. And so we are all of one mind. We need to have a larger gallery space that supplies working studios and residencies. When you have an artist residency that you host, it gets so much attention. There are very few artist residencies on the West Coast. And I have looked because as a mom, I want so badly to have just like 3 weeks of solitude to make art. And on the West Coast, there's just not very many opportunities. So if Fresno could build something, my dream is based on the Minnesota Street Projects in San Francisco. They've taken a warehouse space, they've lined it on either side with galleries, smaller galleries. So, every art hop, you would have six artists showing. Amazing. An emerging artist getting a solo show right out the gate. Like, that's so cool. We can do that. There's down the middle, it's an event space where you can host a dance party or a wedding reception, whatever it is, you can make money by renting out that space. Upstairs and further back, there's working artist studios and places for artist residency. So artists that are living there for a short period of time. If we were able to fund that, then we would have eyes on us from everywhere. And that would be super cool. That would be super cool. And eyes on Fresno means that there are people that will engage in the art that is being done. There are so many people doing Fresno-specific art, things that celebrate the culture of Fresno and just like the diverse beauty of it. And also people who are working on environmental-based art and things that affect Californians up and down the valley. So eyes on us. Hopeful end goal we'd like money to come into. It's been really cool to see the Measure P funding infuse this community with just in this last year how much has come up, things to do, projects that are being done. It's just going to keep going and grow, and we're going to be this beautiful artistic beast. And hopefully, I'd like us to be the beacon, the artistic beacon of the Central Valley.
Okay, this is the last question before we get to books. So
Okay.
there's probably a lot of people listening who don't make visual art themselves, want to contribute, and honestly, the best way they can do it is with their credit cards. But it's the idea of starting to be an art collector is intimidating because it's you almost feel like you want a theme to your collection. If you're thinking, good God, if I showed up with random pieces of art to my house, my wife would lose her shit for sure. She'd be like, where does this go with all the furniture? And so
Absolutely.
there's an element of like how to become a collector with a purpose. Do you have any kind of like small recommendations for people that want to start out in that domain?
Absolutely. And you do not need an interior designer to help you. I think that all of us have an innate understanding of what we like. Like for me, before I got back into painting, I saw this piece from like the Reloved vintage shop on Shaw. They posted it on their Instagram and I was like, must have it. And it was $75. And for me, that was like the most I'd ever spent on art. And I mean, besides art supplies. And it was really cool because I had such an emotional reaction to that. I was like, I love these colors so much. And so now a lot of the art that I do is very similar in palette to that particular piece. Lots of turquoise and orange and white and black. Really cool piece. So you know what you like. You have things in your house because you like them. And I think anytime you go down to Downtown Artist Gallery, there's people like Adam Langotti just had a show there. It was filled with smaller but affordable landscapes. There's something in there for everybody. And so I think just go and look at it and you'll know what you should
Just
get, especially,
find that thing you connect with. All right, let's close with book recommendations. What are a
Cool.
few books you'd like to recommend to listeners?
Okay, so a non-art book I read at the beginning of the year is Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. I cried in public reading this book 3 times, and I love everything that Kingsolver has written, starting with the Poisonwood Bible. And this particular book, she gets into issues of foster care and the opioid crisis.
Appalachia.
Oh my gosh, it's so important for us to read the experiences of people who live in different places. As former foster parents and now adoptive parents, we have through adoption family in Appalachian adjacent communities. And to just be able to empathize in a whole new way is so important. So I recommend all of Barbara Kingsolver's books, but that one in particular blew my mind and I love it. Art book wise, I like Jerry Saltz, which there are some women artists who would disagree with me. He's a cranky art critic, with the stuff he shares on Instagram is usually filthy and highly opinionated. But his books are really no nonsense and get me out of that rut or like sitting in your mind and just being paralyzed, can't move. He's no, get up and go. Art is Life is like a collection of essays that he's written over like several years. And that one's really good. I would say that like maybe we need more harsh critics. We need to be okay with not being so nice, being confronted with things. Not everything is good and pretty. And
Yeah.
we being
Nice
able
is
to.
often a substitute for lying these days.
Absolutely. And that even in academic critique, I think people can get scared of saying what they really think because they don't want to lose a friend or something. So, yeah, I'd love to see Fresnans get a little bit more honest, but it's okay to have an opinion. Absolutely.
To close, where can people find out about the art mentorship program? How can they sign up? What's the process? Give us all the deets.
Cool. So I'm on Instagram at Artist Mentorship Project. And then our website is artistmentorshipproject.com. On that website, there's two like buttons you can click that will take you to a Google form for either an emerging artist to be mentored or to sign up to be a mentor. And our large group events are going to be in the end of April and then in October. So every 6 months we'll be meeting together. And then between those two meetings, the mentorship pairs will be meeting monthly. And so if you are interested, you can reach out to me. The email address is artistmentorshipproject@gmail.com. And yeah, we are looking for everyone. You do not have to be a painter or sculptor or a ceramicist to be a part. Like whatever it is that you do will match you. If you are an emerging artist that wants to get more into like street art and spray paint, I've got a friend that will mentor you. Just let me know.
Awesome. Ruth, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, it's been fun for me too. Thank you so much, Jordan.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.